I'm Jason Gay. In 1959, St. Louis University won the first ever NCAA men's soccer championship. They also won 6 of the next 11 titles. Their team was known for being strong and physical, and their roster, all white.
So they just really dominated the sport.
Mark Wright worked for ESPN's The Undefeated. He loves soccer, and he's most interested in St. Louis's premier rival in the early 1970s, the historically black Howard University.
They had, you know, players from Africa and from the Caribbean, and they were coached by Lincoln Phillips, a Trinidadian who was young.
In 1971, St. Louis and Howard met in the national championship game. And what happened from there changed Mark's life and the lives of countless others. Here's Only a Game's Matthew Stock.
The cover art of the 1971 Howard University yearbook is a simple image of a black man raising his fist. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated less than 3 years earlier. And at Howard, the Black Power movement had taken center stage.
It really is stepping into a cauldron of civil rights.
Ian Bain grew up in Trinidad. His community there was mostly black. Newspapers and TV were his only real exposures to racism and the fight for civil rights. But in 1971, he moved to the United States and joined the Howard soccer team as a freshman midfielder.
Everything that we saw on our one channel in Trinidad and Tobago television was now unfolding right at our doorstep.
Opposing coaches would tell their players to shout racial slurs at Howard players to knock them off their game. Several players remember being called the N-word. But even still, Howard was really, really good.
When we took the field, it gave voice to people in a country that sometimes needed a voice.
On December 30th, nearly 6,000 spectators showed up at the Orange Bowl in Miami with the potential to witness history. If Howard beat St. Louis, it would become the first historically black college or university, or HBCU, to win an NCAA Division I national championship in any sport. Around this time, ESPN's Mark Wright was a young kid growing up in Jamaica and falling in love with soccer.
I remember getting a soccer ball for Christmas as one of my early gifts, and it was just, oh my gosh, it was the best thing ever. Instead of kicking juice boxes and putting newspaper in them and trying to make it a ball, I actually had a real ball, and that made me the coolest kid in the neighborhood.
Mark and his family moved to the U.S. on Mark's 12th birthday. He didn't meet Ian Bain until long after that 1971 championship game.
The first time I met him was in the lunchroom. He was one of the teachers on, you know, lunchroom security detail, I guess, you know, just kind of making sure that the kids didn't walk on tables or throw food at each other.
Mark was a student at Springbrook High School in Maryland. Ian Bain was a 35-year-old Spanish teacher and soccer coach.
He had pretty much the entire student body thinking that Coach Bain, Señor Bain is what everybody called him, was just the guy. This is pre-Google, right? I didn't know him from a can of paint that he was, you know, the football, the soccer legend that he was.
Mark's father was a welder. His mom was a nurse at the Howard University Hospital. And since money was tight, Mark got a job too.
I worked at a dental office. Everything from cleaning the equipment and making sure things are put away, taking out the garbage.
Mark worked from 5 to 7:30 every night, and this meant no soccer after school. But senior year, Mark quit his job and earned a spot on his high school team. And it didn't take long for him to realize that Coach Ian Bain was special.
He's big on showing you what he wants to do, right? So he'll put the ball down and he'll say, look, I want you to kick it this way. And then he would demonstrate, we're teenage boys. We're not super smart, but we're easily impressed. And when a guy like that would demonstrate the way he did, it's like, wow, this guy is dope. And so whenever he said anything, we just kind of did it. If you did something nice, you did something impressive, you know, you would hear Coach Bain say, well, good boy, you're nice boy.
Coach Bain's opinion meant a lot to Mark. So when Mark decided to go to Howard University, he was encouraged to find out that his coach had gone there too.
It gave me a sense of, if Coach Bain had this experience that I'm about to embark on, and if he turned out the way he turned out, then there's a good chance that I'm, you know, things are probably going to end well for me.
And they did. A few years out of school, Mark got a job with ESPN, the magazine. He bounced around in the industry and ended up back at ESPN a few years later. And then one day, in 2015...
I kid you not, a voice just said to me, Google Coach Bain. It had been probably 8 years to that point since we'd spoken.
An article came up about Coach Bain and some of his college teammates. They had just been inducted into the Howard Hall of Fame. Mark got Coach Bain's phone number.
When I talked to him, he said, yeah, it was really good. It was good to see the old guys again. By the way, Coach Lincoln just released his autobiography. We had some pretty good times, but you probably want to read the book if you want the full story. So I got Coach Lincoln's book, and after reading the book, I called Coach back and I said, Coach, this is an ESPN 30 for 30.
Mark got in touch with a friend from ESPN Films named Ken and Holly, and together they got approval to make a documentary short. But they were missing something.
We have no footage, no archived, no video, just grainy newspaper clippings. We had nothing.
Mark, Kennan, and their team interviewed Coach Phillips and about a dozen former Howard players. They generously let me use audio from those interviews in the piece you're listening to right now. So let's go back to December 30th, 1971. Howard's soccer team was set to take on St. Louis for the national championship game and a chance at history. Here's Ian Bain.
I think that game offered a platform. It was about sending messages and now embracing the role that we had.
Howard netted the go-ahead goal midway through the second half and held on to win 3-2.
I felt I would win four NCAA championships. After 71, I knew I was winning three more. There was no doubt in my mind.
It was an unbelievable moment.
That's Howard head coach Lincoln Phillips.
I was so proud and so happy. It brought tears. First one was tears of joy, and then was tears of sorrow.
Tears of sorrow, because just 3 weeks later,
we heard that the NCAA going to sanction us, and they're going to take away the 71 championship from us.
The NCAA alleged that two of Howard's players hadn't taken the correct college entrance exams. It alleged that two others had already used up eligibility by playing in their home countries over the summer.
Really, if the NCAA had put a microscope on every single program, they would find that other programs were doing the same thing.
Mark says Coach Phillips, the Howard players, and the HBCU community all felt that these rules were being selectively enforced.
And the NCAA, they feel, wanted to send a message to Howard University in particular.
Howard made it back to the national semifinal in 1972. But when the NCAA continued its investigation into the team, Howard voluntarily suspended the players in question right before their match. They played shorthanded against St. Louis and lost 2-1 in overtime. Coach Phillips was 31 years old. He had just finished his third season as Howard's head coach. But at an NCAA-sponsored banquet after the game, he stood up to the organization.
We played against this entire wretched system of this society. Anytime they decide to get together to deprive any people of what is due to them, I would say that the NCAA is guilty of practicing racism.
The place went quiet, and I said to myself, oh my God, what are you saying? What are you going to say after this?
St. Louis did not beat Howard University last night. They beat the remnants, what was left of Howard University.
For those 1971 infractions, the NCAA also suspended Howard from postseason play in 1973. And without a championship to chase, the team struggled to preserve a common identity.
There was a lot of nitpicking and bickering.
They even had little fights that I didn't know about, fist fights.
You have players from all over, each of them different.
The Nigerians, when they speak, it sounds as though, you know, hey, you give me the ball. They don't mean anything. But, you know, the Jamaicans, who you think you're talking to, you know? I'm not going to pass the ball to you.
Howard was postseason eligible again in 1974. And with the season on the horizon, Coach Phillips brought someone in to help reunite his players.
Don Basil Matthews, he was a religious man and educator. And he spoke about this triangle of blackness.
A triangle of blackness.
That's Howard alum Rock Newman.
And that triangle, he said, started in Africa, went to the Caribbean, and got at its furthest point away in America. And they were that link that would link back to Africa with the kind of excellence the whole African diaspora could look on this one team, an example of the best that we can be.
if there was a pivotal moment that led us into 1974, it was that moment. We all started to come together.
They said, and rallying around Coach Lincoln, all right, they took it from us. We got to get it back. Revenge and justice became their calling card after that.
Ian Bain was one of only three players still on the Howard team who had been there in 1971. And under his captainship, the 1974 team put together one of the single greatest seasons in college soccer history. Despite continuing to face racism from many opposing teams, Howard outscored their competition 63-6 and carried a 19-game win streak into the NCAA championship game against none other than St. Louis University. Coach Phillips and members of his team say that the St. Louis players treated them with respect. They knew that they could beat Howard by playing the right way.
There was just so much reward that could come from it, but there was also so much onus that was placed on winning this thing again.
So Mark Wright had this incredible story. He had the funding for an ESPN documentary, but he still didn't have any footage.
Not a good place to start. And in just kind of making connections and telling people, hey, we're working on this project, two former film students at Howard during that time reached out to me, or I connected with them, and they told me that, hey, we have, you know, as part of our films class at Howard back in the day, we used to follow the team around, and we used to capture footage of them playing and training. And so I have some footage somewhere on reel-to-reel tape somewhere in my basement. I haven't seen that stuff in years. It's probably no good. I'm like, get it and give it to me and don't touch it. And I will get it digitized and we'll see what we've got.
Mark got his hands on the tape and sent it to a digitizing house.
And I remember getting that call from the man who owned the shop. And he said, hey, Mark, we've got something here. And I said, turn it up for me. He said, it's not the best quality. It's black and white. It's grainy. I don't even know if you can use it. I'm like, just please just turn it up so I can hear it. And what I heard was cheerleaders cheering. I heard somebody giving play-by-play.
It's a cold, bleaky day today here at Busch Stadium in St. Louis for this final of the NCAA for the year 1974.
And that was life-changing for me in the moment. I believed everything Coach told me to that point. I read Coach Lincoln's book, believed it all. But hearing the cheerleaders and seeing the amateur play-by-play, man, get out of here. I mean, that was just transformative for me. You can see from the grainy footage that there's snow that was shoveled up against the embankment. Remember now, these are African players, Caribbean players. These are guys who don't like snow and the cold.
St. Louis looking more aggressive. Kicks a shot, goal St. Louis.
We were on the back foot from early. We couldn't get control of the midfield at all.
That's Ian Bain again.
I was having the worst game of my career. I mean, worst. I was expecting Lincoln to take me off at any minute.
We were lucky to have come into the dressing room one goal down.
Coach Phillips kept Ian Bain in the game to start the second half. He also brought in a speedy Jamaican player named Mario McLennan.
That second half gave us some new energy.
And we took over the game.
Head for the Bison's goal. Bison score. Bison score. And the Bison's are back in this ball game.
The two teams played and played and played.
We went into four overtimes, and the overtime period was all ours. The ball hit the upright, the crossbar.
Beautiful shot off the bar. A header taken. It looked like a goal all the way.
It was just a matter of time.
Comes through to Bain. Bain still on the ball. Bain passes it to Davey. Davey on the ball. Davey trying to beat his man down the wing. Davey does. Wings the ball. Goal, Howard. And Howard is the NCAA champs for 1974.
We got it. We got it back. We just didn't win, you know. We took it.
And the crowd on the field goes mad. The Bisons came here to Busch Stadium to take it all, and they have done it.
Mark named his documentary Redemption Song. It premiered at Howard University in April 2016. Players and coaches from the 1970 through 1974 teams came to watch with their family and friends.
For 40-some years, these players have been walking around with a chip on their shoulder, knowing that they went through hell to do something that had never been done. And their story had never been told. Their grandkids don't know. Their kids don't know. They had no link to share. And so this story was redemption. It still means everything to me.
After the screening, Mark had a chance to talk with Coach Ian Bain.
He just said, you know, Mark, I was looking around the room and I could see guys from that time looking around with pride and saying, I never thought I'd live to see the day where I'd see this story told and my family's here with me. I remember him, you know, giving me the nod and saying, you know, well done. And I, in that moment, I felt like I was 17 again. Because, you know, once you're a player and you have a good relationship with a coach, no matter how old you get, he's still coach and you're still the player.
That story came from Only a Game's Matthew Stock. Special thanks to the folks at ESPN Films for sharing the audio from Redemption Song with us. We'll have a link to the full film on our website. And in case you're wondering what happened with Mark, Coach Bain, and Coach Phillips after the film came out, Mark says they've gotten really close.
I now have them in my life on a regular basis, and I think I'm so much better for it. I'm a better person for it. I'm a better dad for it. I'm sort of a better coach for it. So I'm lucky.